Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and once again it is my pleasure and privilege to present Mike Rupert, a former LAPD narcotics investigator who has heroically crusaded against the intelligence community's involvement in the narcotics trade and also has been dealing with related subjects. Mike is the author of the From the Wilderness newsletter, which gets the Dave Emery 5-star rating, and later on in this broadcast we're going to tell you more about that, where to access it, how to pick it up on the web, and all kinds of things. Mike, welcome back once again to our airwaves.
It's a pleasure, Dave, always.
Now, in a sense, this is going to be kind of like a Moody Blues album for the veteran listeners here, Days of Future Past. People who listened to this program in the 1980s probably got sick of hearing about Edwin Wilson, Frank Turple, and old Mo Gaddafi, and some of the other wonderful playmates that those two had. And then, lo and behold, we were talking about all these weird people like Theodore Shackley and Thomas Kleins and Monkey Morales and all these people. And then, when the Iran-Contra scandal broke, there they were, the whole lovely bunch of them, and
the
so
whole
we
crew.
Yeah, we didn't seem quite as crazy. Now, Edwin Wilson's been out of the view of this listening audience for quite some time, but as is your wont in From the Wilderness newsletter, you have been breaking some very exciting new news about Wilson. We did talk about the possibility that he's going to be getting a new trial, but it now turns out that what Ed Wilson, first of all, let's fill in the veteran listeners about who Ed Wilson was, and let's try to do the impossible. We'll try to catch up on all of the things that we talked about in the 80s for people that have joined us in the 90s, and now we're into the year 2000. Ed Wilson, Frank Turple, and Muammar Gaddafi. Tell us about that, if you would.
Yeah, it's always good to recap, David, because some of the subtleties of what happened 20 to 17 years ago are going to become very significant now as Ed Wilson's motion to vacate one of his convictions really hits running speed here.
And speak as loudly as you can, Mike. I've got you as potted up as high as we can, but the phones between here and L.A. are not what they should be. So speak as loudly as you can for the purposes of posterity here.
We shall stretch the tin cans further apart.
Excellent.
Yes. Basically, the history of Edwin Wilson, the official history, is that he left the CIA in 1972, and beginning in 1975-76, as George Bush was director of Central Intelligence, Ed Wilson, having also left the employ of the Office of Naval Intelligence, where he worked as a consultant for several years, began as a rogue agent, so they say, to sell weapons and technology and training to the Libyist terrorist strongman dictator evil devil personified guy Muammar Gaddafi.
Mike, too, you might want to fill people in, because it was a long time ago that he was the boogeyman of the day, so to speak, and now people are going, huh? You know,
ooh.
Yeah. But of course, in the late 70s, particularly in the early 1980s, Gaddafi was in the news practically every day for one reason or another, and the nation was gripped with fear about this guy. Fill us in a little about, like, the Libyan hit squad and all of this stuff, so that younger listeners or people who weren't tuned in can get a feeling for just what it was that Wilson and Turple were involved with.
Well, in 1982, the Reagan administration made a big deal through reports from Bill Casey's CIA and other alleged sources that Muammar Gaddafi in Libya, a puppet, so to speak, of the Russians, who was receiving vast amounts of Soviet equipment, a terrorist state bordering and very much enemies with Egypt, had sent teams of hitmen to blow up Ronald Reagan in the White House. And this resulted in very large cement blockades being placed around the White House so that no vehicles could have a direct drive line into or through the White House gate. It was the beginning of the restriction of the flow of movement along Pennsylvania Avenue, which some people saw as a restriction of democracy, access to the president. There was great fear in the 80s that Gaddafi was this big boogeyman who was going to blow up everything. And indeed, we still see traces of that today as a trial is pending for two Libyans who are accused of blowing up Pan Am 103, which I don't believe they did, quite possibly with C4 plastic explosive, which lies at the heart of one of Edwin Wilson's convictions.
And it also developed, and this, by the way, for veteran listeners, is in RFA 35, the December surprise, the politics of terror and the exoneration of the secret team dealing with the bombing of Pan Am 103, that the fuse that was used to detonate the explosives, which I think they turned out to be Semtex eventually, which is an East Bloc explosive,
mm-hmm.
But it was definitely one of the ones that were sold to Gaddafi by Ed Wilson.
Correct. He had some very elaborate miniature timing devices constructed by a CIA contractor, and that was in 1976, even before he shipped. And no one disputes, Dave, that Edwin Wilson in 1977, after having shipped thousands of miniature timing devices and a bunch of firearms and set up training camps for Muammar Gaddafi.
And not only that, but a couple of details. Excuse me for interrupting, Mike, but the training was actually being done by active duty special forces personnel, which just aren't easy to recruit if you're a private operator. You just don't walk in and cop green berets off the shelf.
Some active and some retired, and a couple in going through the exhibits and the filings in the case, retired specifically to go to work for Gaddafi. So they just allegedly left the Green Berets and retired to work for Wilson in Libya.
In other words, sheep dipping.
Yes.
And also, we might want to mention, because the figure that was kicked around at the time was 20 tons of plastic explosive, and that's a huge amount of C4.
Actually, 42,300 pounds of C4, which at the time it was shipped all in one lot aboard a chartered DC-8. Represented almost the entire domestic stock of C4 plastic explosive in the United States. Hard to believe that no one knew. Even harder to believe that no one noticed a DC-8 being chartered to ship it to Libya. But that was enough. It's most of the demolitions guys I've spoken to will agree that 2 pounds of C4 will easily bring down a 747.
And this was over 20 tons.
It was enough to bring down 21,747 aircraft.
And one of the things that anybody would know is that much C4, you could not get it out of the country without the powers that be knowing about it.
Well, it kind of stretches credulity a little bit. And what was more was that Wilson was specifically hired, and he had written proposals to Gaddafi. And he was using the Green Berets to teach Gaddafi's security personnel to mold the C4 into bombs that were shaped, and C4 is like Play-Doh. It's a putty, and it's very stable. But the bombs were made to look like radios, lamps, ashtrays, pieces of luggage, very innocuous kinds of things, which is one of the incredible values of C4, which is also very, very powerful, but it's also very stable. So C4 was in very much high demand on the black market, and this, of course, made Gaddafi a very major player. And it was believed, as Wilson and Frank Turpel were accused of these heinous crimes, and as in fact some of Gaddafi's people started, Gaddafi's enemies started getting blown up around the world, that Edwin Wilson was this heinous, horrible devil guy. Well, what was going on at the same time as all of this was transpiring in 1976, 77, 78? Edwin Wilson was a fabulously wealthy individual. Having a company, Consultants International, which had at one time been a CIA proprietary, which the CIA ostensibly sold to Wilson but forgot to tell the rest of the world that it was no longer a CIA company. Wilson owned, between his properties in Northern Virginia and in Great Britain and in Malta, more than 6,000 acres of some of the most prime ranch and farmland in the world. Hunt clubs on his properties in Virginia, where that bordered the DuPonts and the Mellons. Major people from government and the Defense Department would come and hunt on his property.
Robert Keith Gray was one of his partners in that. Tell us a little bit about him.
Robert Keith Gray is a hugely influential power broker who was, I believe, president at one time of Hill & Knowlton Public Affairs worldwide, also a very powerful lawyer who had an office right next to Ed Wilson's in the same building when Wilson was getting started with this business. Gray was deeply involved with Wilson behind the scenes, but also turned up later as a huge influence peddler around the BCCI scandal and other scandals. Gray was a very big mover and shaker.
In Washington, a few more details about Edwin Wilson's various activities, Mike, for background, so people understand what this case is really all about and the ramifications at the time. We've talked about Gaddafi, who was sort of the bin Laden of his day. You know, he was the terrorist du jour, so to speak.
Yes.
And was getting his stuff. We were told that he was in public enemy number one, and yet he was getting his stuff from us.
Yes.
Tell us about Task Force 157. You alluded to Wilson and Naval Intelligence. Fill us in on TF-157 and some of their extracurricular activities.
Well, according to the official source, the open source records from both CIA and ONI, Office of Naval Intelligence, Wilson went to work as a consultant for Task Force 157 at about the same pay grade he had left CIA at, and his job was to go around the world and set up covert operations for studying naval movements and developing agent networks in various seaports to study the movement of navies around the world for naval intelligence in the event of war. Wilson was good at some parts of his job and noticeably deficient at others, but one thing he was extremely good at was billing the Navy for a lot of services. But also, he turns up in other source records, which I have, and you and I have discussed many times, which is the Watchtower missions.
Right.
Involved with United States Army Special Forces troops in Panama. And a whole raft of documents have surfaced corroborating the existence of the Watchtower missions, wherein Ed Wilson is named as under the direction of Tom Clines, who was a very close sidekick of CIA executive Ted Shackley, who I have interviewed recently, and Tom Clines ordering special forces troops into Colombia to plant radio beacons so that planes full of cocaine could fly undetected into Panama and land at Albrook Field, where tons of cocaine were literally stored before the Contra War.
One of the offshoots, too, of 157 was one of the seminal, at least in terms of what reached public awareness, drugs and intelligence operations, which was Nugan Hand.
Yes, absolutely, which was a major financial institution. And we find, of course, all the same players from our, you know, from our cast of rogue characters here, David, that we see all the time. But Wilson was very much involved with that, according to other documents and Task Force 157, but according to naval records, he stopped working for Task Force 157 right around 1976, again the time that George Bush was DCI. George Bush's Associate Deputy Director of Operations, a legendary guy within CIA, who had run the Miami station, JM Wave, right after Castro had come to power in Cuba, who had been involved with the CIA's attempts to use the mafia to kill Castro, and reportedly with the Kennedy assassination, John, was Theodore Shackley. Shackley had run the Miami station for a number of years with absolute power and authority, and obviously to the approval of his bosses at CIA, because he then went to Laos and ran the single largest covert operation in CIA history, which was a secret war in Laos, which was funded by heroin from the Golden Triangle.
And again, Mike, speak a little bit loudly because our connection isn't the best, please.
Okay. And Shackley's directed operations, including those of the infamous airline Air America, were moving tons and tons of heroin out of the Golden Triangle using an opium warlord by the name of Vang Pao, as well as other military intelligence and CIA assets in the region for a number of years. And also during Ted Shackley's stewardship, a number of American POWs were captured by Pathet Lao forces and communist forces, never to be seen or heard from again, even though there were there was an abundance of evidence that they were still alive after we ended the war in Laos. Shackley went on to become the CIA station chief in Saigon, where he served from, I believe it was about 1968 until 72, after which he became the chief of the Western Hemisphere Division of CIA's Directorate of Operations at the time that Salvador Allende was overthrown in Chile. He then went on to rise one more level to become Associate Deputy Director of Operations, just in time to make sure that the Shah of Iran got thrown out. And it was Ted Shackley who was running things for George Bush. Ted Shackley's boss officially was a guy named Bill Wells in the Directorate of Operations, who turns up very heavily, by the way, in Gary Webb's magnificent book, The Dark Alliance.
Hmm.
So, Ted Shackley was more or less Ed Wilson's benefactor and very heavily documented to have extremely close associations with Wilson all the way through 1978.
And if anybody, if it could be said of anybody in Washington, D.C., that they knew where all the bodies were buried, it was Ted Shackley, was and is Ted Shackley.
Absolutely. There is no question about it.
Tell us about Thomas Clines and his relation with Wilson.
Tom Clines basically was Ted Shackley's deputy going as far back as the JM Wave station in Miami. Tom Clines was Shackley's number two also in Laos. Tom Clients had developed a number of very close associations with Cubans, anti-Castro Cubans, who have formed the backbone of a lot of CIA operations. Most notably for the Wilson case, one man named Rafael Chichi Quintero, who became a prominent figure in the Wilson case, kind of looked upon Tom Clients as a father figure. Tom Clients was jokingly referred to as a guy who was always broke, but there's a whole other school of thought that says, looking at the evidence that exists, that Tom Clients was Ed Wilson's handler, doing the work of running Ed Wilson at Ted Shackley's direction.
Tell us about EATSCO. That's another of the Wilson operations that once was big news and probably now is ancient history to those who even remember it.
Yeah, but EATSCO was kind of a precursor and a glimpse into what was to become Iran-Contra. It also cracked the door into some great areas of the shadow government, which wherein a lot of researchers had never been able to see before. And EATSCO was a company called Egyptian American Transportation Services Company, if I get that correctly. And it was designed by Ed Wilson and Tom Clients to secure all of the contracts for shipping hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars worth of military supplies to Egypt after the Camp David Accords had been signed by Anwar Sadat and Menachem Begin. It was actually secured an exclusive contract to do that. Now, Wilson was supposedly a behind-the-scenes partner putting up a lot of money, but the other partners in the company included Richard Secord, an Air Force general, and Eric von Marbod, a very senior official in the Defense Department who was running essentially all the Defense Department's military aid programs and controlling how aid was dispersed overseas. It was set up to make lots of money in terms of kickback, but it also, of course, had the blessing of CIA because Ted Shackley was supposed to have been a silent partner in it, and Tom Clients certainly was, as evidenced by the fact that Ed Wilson loaned him money to start up the partnership.
And so, another thing that I'll just kick in briefly, Frank Turpel, who was Edwin Wilson's partner in a lot of this, discussed some of the various other terrorists that the Wilson-Turpel operation had, according to Turpel, been involved with training, and there's corroboration on a lot of this. One was Carlos the Jackal, about whom, again, people used to hear about him all the time, and now he's kind of ancient history. The Red Brigades in Italy, elements of the IRA, the Grey Wolves in Turkey, one of whom shot the Pope. And it was sort of like terrorists are us. Was the Wilson-Turpel operation. So that, and people might not remember, you know, how okun-raw the whole subject of terrorism was, that it was the godchild of the Soviet Union, and this is how they were going to undermine this, that, and the other thing. And yet, with the Turpel-Wilson operation, an awful lot of the evidentiary tributaries ran in the opposite direction.
Yeah, but of course, if you're a guy like me, David, and a guy like you, well, I'll speak for myself, and then you can either grunt or dissent, is that, you know, I am a firm believer, especially having read Ted Shackley's book, The Third Option, which basically calls for it, that we deliberately arm our enemies to create enemies so that we can sustain these hugely inflated military and intelligence budgets.
Mm-hmm. I think we do that sometimes, yes, absolutely.
And that certainly it is my belief that at the end of the Vietnam War, we had a dearth of visible enemies around the world. The Soviet Union was really not trying to take us on anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And with the bad press that had befallen the CIA, and certainly that was coming down after the involvement with the overthrow of Salvador Allende in Chile, the agency was looking at some budget cuts. And, you know, one of the best ways to prevent budget cuts is to make sure that you have a continuing, ongoing threat.
Mm-hmm.
And it is my firm belief that Ed Wilson's delivery of 40,000 pounds of C4 was a thoroughly sanctioned event.
I wonder, Micah, if you would underscore again who was director of Central Intelligence when all of this was going on.
Well, the director of Central Intelligence, when this began, late 1975, was George Herbert Walker Bush, who remained. Actually, he was DCI for all of 1976 until February of 1977,
mm-hmm.
when he was replaced by Admiral Stansfield Turner, who came in under President Jimmy Carter, a Democrat who was not part of the Bush camp, a definite outsider, and so was Stansfield Turner.
And what did Stansfield Turner do with this cast of characters?
Well, he didn't do it immediately, and this is what's really interesting, and we'll see this in a major article that I'm writing for the next issue of my newsletter, From the Wilderness. Stan Turner kept Ted Shackley as the Associate Deputy Director of Operations in charge of covert operations until December of 1977.
So in other words, Bush was out, but Turner kept on a lot of a little shrub, so to speak.
That's exactly right. Bill Wells retired as director of operations, deputy director for operations, and Shackley remained in position as ADDO roughly until very early 1978, did not leave the agency finally and retire until early 1979 because Stansfield Turner moved him to a really lesser position outside of the Directorate of Operations. But Shackley was still involved as ADDO during the period of time when Ed Wilson made the deliveries of C-4 to Muammar Gaddafi, and I think that's going to prove to be very significant down the road.
I'd just like to read a brief clipping from the Los Angeles Times, Mike. This is from Monday, January 17th of the year 2000, which was this past Monday. We're speaking on Sunday the 23rd. Bear in mind what you just heard about Stansfield Turner, who did conduct a house cleaning of sorts at the agency and incurred the wrath of a lot of these people, but certainly...
More than 800 people he forced to leave the agency.
Including George Bush.
George Bush was going to go because he was Gerald Ford's man.
Right, but in other words, there was a house cleaning, and a lot of people went at that point, ostensibly.
Absolutely.
At least. Then, of course, a lot of them wound up helping to destabilize Jimmy Carter with the October surprise and Iran-Contra later on. This is Dateline San Jose, Costa Rica, and bear in mind this article, as you hear about some of the things that are now taking place with the Wilson case, which is back in the news. This is ex-CIA chief hurt, wife killed in airplane crash. Again, LA Times, 1/17/2000. Former CIA Director Admiral Stansfield Turner was among 17 people injured in a weekend airplane crash that killed his wife, a U.S. couple, and a Spaniard, Costa Rican authorities said Sunday. Turner, CIA Director under President Carter, was in a San Jose hospital Sunday. No details on his condition were available. Turns out he was in critical but stable condition. He's now recuperating in Texas. So,
yeah, he is at Fort Sam Houston, and we checked on his condition just Friday, as a matter of fact. He is in critical but stable. He is in a quote, induced coma. He has broken ribs and major head injuries, and so there are questions as to his future ability to talk, although I wouldn't think he would be doing that anyway because his wife is dead, and I believe the man still has children.
Mm-hmm.
What's very interesting, David, and we should probably go back and put what's happening historically now with the Wilson case and
right.
the conviction, is that on the 12th of January, Helene Boettner, the former comptroller of the Central Intelligence Agency, who had been an aide to Madeleine Albright, was a 63-year-old lady, an avid scuba diver, died mysteriously while scuba diving in the Bahamas with a group of like seven people. In absolutely clear water, she became separated from her dive group and was found a while later drowned under some rocks.
Now, this was when?
The 12th.
Of January?
Yes.
Aha. I wonder if she had been taking canoeing lessons from William Colby.
It's entirely possible. But then the following Friday, Washington, D.C., United States District Court Judge Stanley Sporkin, who had been the general counsel of the CIA and deeply involved in Edwin Wilson's trial,
mm-hmm.
and who was deeply involved in what is now being revealed to be, I will call, a perjured memorandum, which was used to secure Edwin Wilson's conviction, retired from the federal bench on Friday, and on Saturday, Stansfield Turner's plane crashed in Costa Rica, and Stansfield Turner, according to David Adler, Ed Wilson's lawyer, is one of the people who might have been called in a motion to get Ed Wilson a new trial because it was Stansfield Turner who ordered investigations as to what in the heck Wilson and Shackley were doing.
So now, when you say Friday, that would have been the 15th to 14th of January.
That's correct.
And that was the same day that Turner's plane went down?
That was the day before.
Okay, so Sporkin retired on Friday the 14th.
Correct.
And then the next day,
Turner's plane crashes in Costa Rica.
And in the 12th, it was Helene Boatwright, was that her name?
The 12th.
And she
got Helene Boatner, B-O-A-T-N-E-R.
Oh, Boatner, and she got the William Colby bend, so to speak. William Colby, of course, the former CIA director and ex-Jedburgh commando who suddenly decided to take a canoe trip with his computer running and a meal on the table and a glass of wine.
No life jacket.
And wound up, disappeared for a while, and they found his dead body in the water later.
Correct.
So there is movement and lethality once again surrounding the Ed Wilson case. You know what, Mike, we're nearing the end of this side of the tape. What I'd like to do now would be to take a break so that you can give people some information about From the Wilderness. And then what I'd like to do at the beginning of the next half of this interview, we should probably review by way of underscoring patterns here. What happened when the Ed Wilson case began to get tried in the early 1980s? There was a whole bunch of deaths at that time, too. But if you would give people the particulars about your website, From the Wilderness, etc., and then we'll continue with this fascinating and obviously very timely tale.
Okay, the website is www.copv, like in Victor, or versus, CIA.com, copvcia.com. Think Roe v. Wade, but just make it cop against the CIA.
Sure.
You can call us at 818-788-8791 during normal business hours, and someone will call you back. And for anybody who subscribes to FTW and mentions David Emery's name, you get 4 issues for free. Absolutely. You're our best guy, Dave. We love you.
All righty. And a lot of this can be read on the website, right?
Yes, but none of the current issues are going to be up there. My first story on the Edwin Wilson case and why he's coming up for a new trial and why perjury is being disclosed is up there, but I've got a huge breaking story right now where I've actually interviewed Ted Shackley, and some of the biggest names in the American judicial system will be mailing to subscribers on the 28th of January.
Okay, well, now people have the particulars about From the Wilderness. I will simply add that it gets the Dave Emery 5-star rating. We're going to be continuing with the tale of the tape as it applies to Edwin Wilson in the next half of this interview when we once again visit with Mike Rupert. For Mike Rupert, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening.